This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2019, held in Montgomery, Indiana, on March 1 and 2.
Seven important topics to discuss. Or as I've subtitled it, becoming more than a penny-pinching personnel managing problem fixing committee. I want to start by telling you about an impressive and complicated machine. This machine was built by a man named Lawrence Wallstrom, who's a retired clockmaker. He built it over about 15 years, starting in 1948. It has over 700 gears of all shapes and sizes. It was a popular attraction at shows and expos when he was taking it around, and it's still a popular attraction at a museum, craftsmanship museum in California. The motion, as you can see, is mesmerizing. And you can't hear it, but the soft whirring that all the gears make is really quite soothing. Also, as you might expect with that many moving parts, it breaks down a lot. The second owner that owned the machine said, "I'll show it for a day or for a weekend, and then I'll spend the next 3 or 4 days getting it running again." The current caretaker at the museum says it's broken down about a dozen times a year, and that's just sitting in a museum. What does the machine do, you might ask? Nothing. All this striking craftsmanship and beautiful function and impressive coordination, years of work that went into this, it's all 100% pointless. Now, you could make an argument, I guess, that it's art and it doesn't need a point. But as Popular Science back in 1954 already commented, the machine has over 700 working parts that rotate, twist, oscillate, and reciprocate, all for no purpose except movement. How about your school? Beautiful function. Impressive coordination, just for the sake of pleasing movement, motion. Years of work, constant repairs. It all seems pretty pointless if it's all for no purpose except movement. I want to encourage us this morning to lift our heads. We've got an exalted calling. We're called to provide direction for the development and shaping of young human beings. But it's hard to really fulfill that when our primary focus is always here and now, and on ensuring smooth operation and putting out fires and dealing with the myriad little things that come up. My goal in this short talk is to encourage us to be more than fire department school boards. To encourage proactiveness rather than just reacting. To encourage giving direction rather than always only responding to needs. Now, obviously, putting out fires is part of what you're supposed to do. I mean, that is part of our calling as a school board, but if that's all we do, I think we're setting ourselves up for exhaustion and discouragement. I want to suggest seven topics presented as questions in this case that I think we need to discuss often and ask ourselves often in an attempt to change our focus from only here and now and to lift our focus at least occasionally and maybe every meeting to bigger things, to a more far-sighted view. So the seven things that I suggest, and there are many more, and these are, I want these to serve as starting points for you and suggestions for you. The first one, what is our mission and what is our vision? Now, I'm assuming probably most of your schools have a mission statement, a vision statement, or maybe both. But I want to think about this a little bit. Do we have a mission? Do we know what we're doing? If you look into mission and vision statements a little bit, mission is generally defined as what are you doing? What is it that you're about? What are you offering? And who are you offering it to? Like, what's your audience? That's the mission. So what are you doing? What are we doing? Whom do we serve? How do we serve them? What's the offering that your school has to your church or your community? Is it academic excellence, character formation, Bible literacy, worldview formation, maybe all of those? What are you offering? And then also, do we have a vision? We probably have a vision statement. Vision is more, why are you doing what you're doing? What's the why? Why do we have a Christian school? Is there a purpose beyond just pleasing movement? Is school a necessary evil, something we do because we have to? Is it basically just a Christianized version of public school? Why do we have a school? And what do we want it to be? A personal perspective here. I fear that we might be lacking a little bit in a vision for a Christian, and it's specifically an Anabaptist education. Many of us today are removed a generation or two from the initial struggles of the Christian day school movement in the mid-20th century. And in my perspective, many of us are pretty content to kind of skate along on the coattails of those that fought for that right. And also pretty content to assume that we have the same reasons for having a Christian school that they did, that we have the same convictions that they did. Do we? Do we actually know what it was for, what that fight was for, and what it is? What's the why behind our having one? Is it enough to know what we don't want? Public school? Is that enough? Is it sustainable? And is it enough for our vision to be replicating successful Mennonites with a good work ethic? We've already heard some about service this morning. I think that must be integral to the vision of having a Christian school. I think it's a good question to ask. Do we need to craft a new vision for Anabaptist education, specifically Anabaptist Christian education in the 21st century? And what does that look like in your particular setting? A quote from the great philosopher Yogi Berra says, if you don't know where you're going, you may end up someplace else. A few examples of a mission and a vision that can guide an organization, and I picked a few here that are not from in the world of education and certainly not Christian education. The first one actually comes from my place of work, which is a hospital, Washington Regional. And they have a very clearly delineated mission and vision statement. The mission is, Washington Regional is committed to improving the health of people in communities we serve through compassionate, high-quality care, prevention, and wellness education. That's what we do. The vision, the reason we do it, is to be the leading healthcare system in Northwest Arkansas, the best place to receive care and the best place to give care. And that mission and vision is reiterated at every staff meeting. That's the first thing, one of the first things that's read at every staff meeting. Just a reiteration of that. Simon Sinek says, all organizations start with why, but only the great ones keep their why clear year after year. A few more examples. Amazon, their mission is, we strive to offer our customers the lowest possible prices, the best available selection, and the utmost convenience. I'd say they do pretty well with that. One click buy. That's convenience. And their vision, or at least part of it, is to be Earth's most customer-centric company, where customers can find and discover anything they might want to buy online. The mission of another, of the organization called TED, T-E-D, you may be familiar with their videos. They put on high-quality conferences around the world. Their mission is simply to spread ideas. And the reason, the why, the vision, at least part of it, we believe passionately in the power of ideas to change attitudes, lives, and ultimately the world. And that's what drives them. Now, obviously, there's no direct biblical call to write out a mission and vision statement. You know, thou shalt writest out a... It's not there. But there is a definite call to discernment and wisdom and prudence, which is part of that is looking ahead. You can just read through Proverbs. The theme of Proverbs is to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. This is from Proverbs 1. To receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. And 1 Chronicles has the account of 200 men of Issachar, who, it says, they understood the times and knew what Israel should do. Is that your school board? And also, just one more quick little thing. You cannot pass on something you don't have, a vision. Do you have a personal vision? How do you get it? Well, talk with others who do. This kind of thing is contagious. Read, come to CASB, talk to God about it. Alan Roth, I heard him say once, what you pray for, you get, and what you pray for repeatedly, gets you. Second question, what are our specific goals? So how are we aiming to get there? If we have this lofty vision, it can be a little bit demoralizing if it's not brought within reach. So it's a good idea to take the vision and then break it down into some achievable steps. Does your board set goals for the school? Do you have yearly goals? How about maybe 5 and 10 year goals? I'll admit this is something that we don't do just a whole lot of in my school. I'll admit that most of this talk actually is pretty aspirational. We do have a few things that we are specifically working on and that we're talking about quite a bit. I think it's okay to make big goals that you're not sure you're going to be able to reach, but if they're out there, you've at least got something to aim at. I've heard them called, just recently, BHAGs. Big, hairy, audacious goals. So it's okay to make them, but then it's also okay to revise them as needed, you know, keep them at least somewhat realistic. Actually, if your goals are just wooden and inflexible, they just become stakes to beat yourselves over the head with. I mentioned that our school is working on, we do have, our board has a few goals. One of them that we're taking small steps toward is coming up with a salary schedule. We're a small school. We've got 18 students, and so some of this stuff just hasn't really been ironed out yet, but what do we base our teacher pay on, you know, and what do we give, how much of a raise do we give them every year, and so on. That's something that we're working toward. I heard of another school recently that was really working on their leadership model. Is it going to be a board administrated school or a principal administrated school, and kind of how the dynamics there need to be worked out. It could even be things like improvement in an academic, a specific academic area, or high school graduation rates, or anything. You think about how to implement some of the big picture stuff for your school and break it down. How well do we communicate? A board may be positively bursting with vision and goals, but if it's not communicated, it doesn't really do a whole lot. A man was struggling to get his washing machine through the front door of his home, and his neighbor happened to be walking by. The neighbor was a good neighbor, and he stopped and asked if he could help. The man breathed a sigh of relief, said, "That would be great. I'll get it from the inside, you get it from the outside. It shouldn't take long at all." And they picked it up and they continued to struggle for 5 minutes, continual struggle. They were both exhausted and they stopped, wiped the sweat from their brow. The neighbor said, "This thing's bigger than it looks. I don't know if we'll ever be able to get it into your house." And the man says, "Into my house?" There's one way to make sure that you're on the same page and pushing the right direction, and that is to communicate, to talk about it. Do you have opportunities to communicate your vision and your ideas and your goals and even just your plans to your church, your patrons, the rest of your board, for that matter? Do you have opportunities and means of good communication? I encourage you as a board to make opportunities for that, and specifically thinking of communication with your parents and your patrons and your church. Things like, patron meetings, church meetings focused on school, parent-teacher associations type stuff. Things like, new parent orientations or open house before school where you invite the parents in and let them see the classrooms and just talk about school. Also then, communication with your staff, obviously, staff meetings and board involvement in staff meetings is a great way to stay connected with them. Maybe a few more practical things you could think about, and some of these may not specifically fall under the umbrella of the board, but they could. It's just making sure that there's smooth ways to communicate with, and I'm thinking again specifically of between the church and the school or the patrons in the school, things like phone relays or messaging systems, mass texts, newsletters. Maybe you have online presence somehow where you can share things like that. Basically, just make sure your parents and your patrons know what's going on. Make sure they have calendars and schedules and that you stick to them then. I don't think there's much that saps enthusiasm more than just silence and not knowing what's happening. So encourage your teachers to talk to the parents. Encourage your parents to talk to the teachers. Encourage your board members, fellow board members, to talk to the teachers and the parents. And encourage parents to talk to the board and the board to talk to each other. Open communication is vital. And I think it's a good item to think about occasionally. How are we doing? It will help immensely, I think, with morale and just the amount of involvement that you have. And speaking of involvement, another topic to discuss or suggestion is, are we happy with the amount of parental involvement that we have? And maybe not just parental, but also just church and community. Our school operates as specifically a church school, and so that's kind of where I'm coming from. But some sub-questions here might be, does your school operate as a a sovereign entity, are parents able to just check the box, school taken care of? Or is it integrated into your church, integrated into your community? Do you see yourselves, the school, as a servant of the church? School really is the church in action. It's the most important mission that a church or churches can have. It's a prime opportunity for the perfecting of saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. And as such, I think it's vital that we don't let parents, or even I can tend to do this as a board member, honestly, kind of check the box. School's taken care of. Think about, are there concrete ways to get involved and to get the community and the parents involved? And again, some of these things vary a little bit depending on the size of your school and the setup. Our school doesn't actually have a principal. As a school board chairman, I am pretty much the administrator as well. And we're, like I said, we're pretty small. So I know this is different for different settings, but are there ways that you can get parents involved, maybe teaching certain skills or coming in for special classes? Or when I first started teaching, I taught for 6 years. The first year, I had, I think, 9 students. It was the whole school, including 2 first graders. And it was grades 1 through 9 or 10, I think. It's a big range. And I was supposed to teach these first graders, too, how to read. And that's a big job. So I ended up getting, for at least part of the year, making a schedule and having the moms come in, I think every day of the week, or just about every day. I had a mom come in and help me out in the afternoons, take them off and read and do some activities and that kind of thing. I think that sort of thing is invaluable in keeping a sense of, this is our school, not the school out there somewhere. It could be even small things like, you know, getting dads to have devotions. I'm assuming probably a lot of you do that, at least some. Maybe getting moms involved in bringing hot lunch occasionally, or parental career days. You know, have all the dads come in and talk about what they do. Those are some ideas. Also then, we talked about parent-teacher PTA meetings and stuff, but, you know, do you have a culture where attendance is expected? And not just of your parents. We actually had a church school meeting, we call it, 2 nights ago. And I was encouraged by how many non-parents were there, people that weren't directly involved with the school. And I think that's a great part of the vision to keep alive. What is our school spirit? And I feel like I'm probably reiterating a lot of what Gerald talked about this morning in this point, but it is true. It is true. Every school has an atmosphere, a culture, a prevailing wind, if you will, based on attitudes and expectations and habits. Which way does your prevailing wind blow? The culture, culture in general, actually, is largely defined by stories, and the culture of a school is the same way. Do you know who's telling the story of your school? What topics are being discussed at lunch? What are playground behaviors? Water fountain comments? Posture, both physical and, is attitudinal a word? I think it is. What's the posture of not just your students in your school, but the teachers in your school? Just another example from my days of teaching. early in my teaching career, again, had a small school, and I heard a lot of the word stupid. That's just stupid. And it wasn't so much talking about other people, but just things and ideas and happenings and whatever. But I didn't like it. I didn't like the way that it directed the. I didn't like the direction of that wind. So I talked about it. I think it was at devotions one morning. I just brought it up and talked about it and curtailed the use of the word somehow. I don't think I told them they're not allowed to say it, but you know, tried to encourage them not to use it. I think that simple little thing helped. Just tweaked the direction of the wind a little bit. Obviously, rules don't always fix a problem, and especially when you're dealing with culture issues. But I think it's good to at least be aware of what's there. Sometimes the culture of the school isn't immediately apparent to somebody who's directly involved either. Us as board members, we have a valuable position in that we can kind of step in and sample the waters, or sample the wind, I guess, to keep my metaphors parallel. And maybe you're too involved. Maybe get an outside opinion. Also, I heard somebody recently just encourage that you're probably not going to really understand the direction of the culture of your school if you pop in for a little bit and leave again. So, can you stay all day? I don't. But it probably wouldn't be a bad idea. Or at least for a little longer period of time. Another big question to think about: how do we find and support our teachers? No, I don't have knowledge of a secret cache of teachers somewhere. And I know that we think about teachers a lot. But here again, I want to encourage us to think big picture. Not just, hey, we need teachers, but who do we want? And Gerald talked about this morning as well, but who do you want to shape your children? And I have to just say ouch here too, because I want to just hire somebody. If they're willing, let's hire them. And I'm not sure that we've done very well about thinking carefully about who do you want your children to become, and then look at the teachers you hire and see if you want them to become that. And then maybe another part of this big picture question here is, are there better ways to find teachers? How about growing them? That's a long term outlook. But can we think that way? How about starting to grow our teachers? Are you shaping students who will be teachers? And then the second part of the question: how do we support our teachers? Do you know your teachers? Do you know where they turn for help and encouragement, support, advice, stress relief? And especially for teachers that don't have family in your community, do they have a support system, and are you able to provide that in some way? How about teacher appreciation activities? I remember when I was teaching, I was informed one day that the high school boys were going to take my car and detail it. I didn't have a choice in the matter. And it was part of a whole week of teacher appreciation activities. I had meals and extra meals made for me, and just a lot of little small things. How long do you want your teachers to teach, and what are you doing about it? What are we able to do to equip and empower our teachers? What do they need to do a better job? There's lots of resources available now. And again, this depends a little bit on the structure of your school, I'm aware, but as a board, do we depend on the teachers or the principal Do we just depend on them to make the school go? Kind of goes back to the checking the box thing. It's easy just to sort of assume that, well, I'm not hearing anything, I can check that box. I actually, as a teacher, I actually had a board member tell me that once. He said, well, I guess we're not really all that involved, but I'm not really hearing anything, so we're sort of assuming everything's going okay. It's kind of a backhanded compliment. Don't give that kind of backhanded compliment to your teachers and even to your administrator and principal. And then lastly, are we faithful financial stewards? And again, I know that as boards, we think about money all the time. But again, are we thinking beyond the immediate needs? I know that from the patrons and the church's perspective, when they give money to the school, whether it's tuition or offerings or however your school is supported, in their mind, that money should now belong to the school, and I don't have anything I don't have any say as to how it's spent. But from the board's perspective, that money belongs to them, and we're stewards, and we're using someone else's money. Are we being faithful with that? And that doesn't mean just trying not to spend money, but spending it on the right things. And again, big picture, what are we trying to do with our school? What is our mission, our vision? Are we spending money on things that are going to make that become a reality? Are we spending it on teachers and on teacher development? Are we spending it on tools, technology? There's no right or wrong thing to spend it on, I don't think, but are we thinking big picture? Does it line up with what we're trying to do? Also, are we happy with the teacher pay that we're able to pay? How is that determined? And are we rewarding them adequately and staying within the constraints of our funds? What does our budget look like? I don't know a whole lot about a school board budget because we're a three-man board, and this is one area, again, that we haven't done great in, but that's a big picture issue that can be brought up occasionally. And then also, just would there be better ways to raise funds for our particular situation? Tuition, free will offerings, there's many different ways that our schools are funded. Maybe fundraisers and that kind of thing. But these are big picture questions that are good to discuss occasionally. Well, that's seven. I know there's many other things that could be asked. Are our policies serving us well? Are we happy with our curriculum and our teaching methods? What are we doing about the academic areas that we're weak in? And even just looking within the board, are there ways we can function better as a board, provide more continuity maybe, those types of big picture questions? Obviously, you probably can't take this list and discuss each one in depth at every meeting. But I'd like to encourage you to maybe make a practice of taking one or two things regularly that are not immediately pressing matters and put them on the agenda and discuss it. Also, use the summer to get ahead of some of these issues. Maybe even plan a board retreat to focus just on big picture stuff. Somehow, I want to just encourage you, let's find a way to avoid getting bogged down in the minutia and relegated just to putting out fires. And let's take time to focus on the big picture issues. I want to close with another story. It's a story of Eastern Airlines, Flight 401. Actually, this very plane. This plane took off from JFK Airport in New York, heading to Miami on December 29, 1972. Had 176 people on board. This was a late evening flight. The plane at that point was only 4 months old. The cockpit crew flying the plane had over 51,000 hours of flying time between the three of them. The flight was uneventful as they began its descent into Miami a little after 11:30 p.m. The first officer noticed that the indicator light for the front landing gear hadn't illuminated. So they cycled the gear again. Still didn't work. They contacted the tower. The tower told them to go into a holding pattern at 2,000 feet. So they did that, circled around, set the autopilot until they could figure out the problem, and they focused on figuring out the problem. They immediately decided to troubleshoot whether or not it was just, whether or not the gear was actually defective or whether it was just the light bulb that had burned out. So they actually removed the little light assembly. And they were working on that, and they couldn't figure it out. They actually got it jammed as they were trying to put it back in, and they were getting frustrated with it. They actually sent the flight engineer down a little portal to a little visual window to see if he could see if the gear was down. It was too dark. He couldn't see. However, as they were preoccupied with the indicator light, they didn't notice that somehow the altitude control on their autopilot had gotten switched off. They didn't notice that they were gradually losing altitude. They didn't notice the altitude warning chime. And according to the cockpit recordings, they didn't notice that anything was awry until 10 seconds before the plane flew into the mud of the Everglades at over 200 miles per hour. Of the 176 people on board, 101 of them died, including all three of the cockpit crew. The real tragedy here is that they actually had the right idea. The gear was fine. All that was wrong was the indicator light. They were checking the right things. But while they were fixated on that immediate issue in front of them, they forgot the big picture. They forgot to fly the plane. Don't forget to fly the plane.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.